Hello and welcome to another episode of the Mark Groves podcast. I just got back from LA from an event called It's Her Turn, which was run by Kathy Heller. And I was really blessed because I was like one of, there were 400 attendees, something like that. And I was one of one males allowed. And that honestly was such a honor and a privilege to be in a room where all the sacred stuff happens, you know, all the witchy circles. I get to report back to men, like, what actually happens in there? I'm like, buddy, do you know how crazy it is to be in a room where you can actually feel all the cycles sync up at the same time? And did you know that the cycles sync to the alpha female? That's pretty profound. Anyways, all that to say, it was so incredible. And Kathy has this sort of, I see her like a shaman, you know, in the way that she navigates this relationship, money and dreams and pursuits and passions. And I'm always reminded to just be more of myself, because if you are more of yourself, you are living in the abundance of actually who you are. And that was just a great reminder. And I was blessed enough to get a copy of her book, Abundant Ever After, which I dove into because whenever I talk with Kathy, I am forever shifted. Like, there's always a deep remembering of my unlimited ability, the sacredness of the uniqueness of my DNA, of the magic that I was born at this time on this day, and I get to be here in this world with you. And am I... like, what a privilege it is to be able to stand in all of myself and that be the gift, and anything else to be operating from a sense of scarcity. So it's really just such an honor to share this episode with Kathy Heller, where we talk about what does it mean to live abundantly ever after. And I encourage you, wherever you get your books, to pick up a copy of Kathy's book, because it's not about money. It's about you and bringing your magic to life. So with all that said, wherever you get your podcast, please hit the subscribe button so you don't miss any. I'm really pumped about releasing this episode and sharing it with you. And I can't wait for you to let me know how this shifts you and how it makes you feel. And yeah, let's go. Here's Kathy Heller.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Mark Groves Podcast. Today I have on renowned teacher, podcaster, author. I like using the word renowned. It's just so good. She hosts one of the top spiritual podcasts. It's called Abundant Ever After. It's had 45 million downloads. I've had the honor of being on it once, maybe twice. I think twice. So I'm so excited to have Kathy Heller on. So welcome.
Mark, you are like instant confetti hearts for me. Like, I think of you and then it's like a confetti hearts emoji. I love you. It's so easy to love you. You are just like a walking billboard of love. The amount of inspo, just knowing you're in the world, it does me really good. It's a really cool thing that God made you and that you're here and that you're just so truly kind and willing to have real conversations. And I just love knowing that you exist and do your thing in the world, because it gives me lots of courage. It gives me lots of strength. And I'm completely clear why people are obsessed with you. You're also gorgeous. And I didn't even mention that in the top five things. Like, that's how gorgeous you are on the inside, that like the fact that you could be as famous as Harry Connick Jr. just for your looks. We don't even need to go there. We don't even need to mention it, because all the things that you really are just so spectacular. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Oh my gosh. What a thank you. I need to write that out and make that like my,
write it out, Mark. Read it and weep.
My testimonial. Well, thank you. You are abundant with your words and generous with them. And I've had the honor of being guided by you and through our friendship, of being supported in understanding how to create abundance, how to receive abundance, I think maybe is the right word.
I'm curious. Yes, I think you're right.
Because I know you got a new book coming called Abundance Ever After. And it comes out December 3rd. So make sure everybody go pre-order, because I can promise you, I know this from my experience of Kathy, is that if you read it and apply it, it will change your life and bring abundance. Like, that's it's occurred for me. And so I'm so happy you actually put it into written language, you know, so that everybody can access it. So let's start with that. Like, what made you actually say, I'm going to, which I would call a torturous experience of writing a book.
It really is.
Yeah. Yeah. What made you do it?
So first of all, I really don't take myself very seriously, except that I will say this, which is that my rabbi says we're all someone because we're some of the one. And so really it's like oneness, right? That's the whole deal. I mean, that was the mic drop of Abraham, is this idea that God is one. It doesn't mean God over there is, there's one of them. It means it's all oneness, right? Which is what Einstein helped us understand, that we live in an atomic world. And if the world is really more made up of vibration, then the world is energetic, which means we're all in this one infinite field. So there's really no separation. And that's why I wrote it, because there's no end to how often we need to hear that message. Because when we look with our eyes, we're blind, right? But when we close our eyes, we see so much further. It's like when you instinctively want to sort of check in with yourself, whether you meditate or you go to make a wish on a candle, on a cake, you close your eyes because you know you have insight when you don't look with your eyes, because your eyes lie to you. Your eyes tell you that you're all separate and we're all one. And so for me, I felt like it came time to like really put these ideas in the world. I had a really spectacular coincidence of synchronicity when I was 21. I was graduating from college and I went on a backpacking trip to Jerusalem for 3 weeks. I was going to like tour the area. And I stayed there for 3 years and I learned Jewish mysticism and Kabbalah. And I studied with this beautiful rabbi and his wife, and she's so deep. And the two of them and their gorgeous children. And I lived in the old city, King David's like city. And it was just like really one of those wild, like I look back, it's like a movie, you know, like I met him in a very like happenstance way. And then he's got freckles and red hair, and we started talking and he was so loving, and I met his wife. And then next thing I know, they're like, do you want to stay with us? And then I just kept staying and staying and staying. And it was like my Mr. Miyagi kind of like dojo. And I learned Danielson. And I learned so much that I realized, oh my gosh, when I look back, like this is why I have experienced all this gorgeous abundance in my life, and why I meet certain people, and why I'm connected to certain things, is because you used the word earlier, receive. You said maybe it's receiving, you receive it. And I just want to say something about this. So what I learned from Rabbi Aaron was the fact that people talk about the law of attraction. Like we've heard that before, that phrase became very like popular. And he said to me that all of life is about the law of reception, and that the word Kabbalah, literally the word itself, likabel, the word Kabbalah means to receive. And that we are meant to be in this world as receivers. And what does that mean? It's kind of like a Wi-Fi receiver. It's kind of like a radio receiver. And he uses the metaphor of a radio, which I think is gorgeous and so masterful. And it's in the book. And I sort of explain this in the book, is that he said to me, you know, if you had a radio right here, right next to you, and you turned it on, then all of a sudden you'd hear music. But where was the music before you turned on the radio? It was here. It was just hidden in plain sight, literally. Mm-hmm. And you go, wait, that's true, right? So there's always music all around us all the time, but it's about, are you turned on, and is the receiver receiving the music? And then here's what's even more interesting about the metaphor he uses, is if I did have a radio, then I could decide if I want to listen to like salsa music or big band music, or if I want to listen to an AM show. And why would I get to listen to it? Well, I'd have to change the tuning of the receiver. And so truly, truly our job, people always say to me like, what do I need to do? Tell me what to do. And I'm always like, it's more an answer to a different question, which is who do I need to be, right? And the way that we radiate, the way that we are in resonance, the way that we energetically show up in the world expands or contracts our capacity to receive different music, so to speak. And so when I spent that time in Jerusalem, I felt like I had totally new lenses to see the world. And I came to Los Angeles, and then there was this whole program starting at UCLA. It was the Mindful Awareness Research Center. And I said, that sounds really cool. I want to study mindfulness. And I spent a few years there studying mindfulness. And I looked at brain scans, and I was able to understand then from a scientific point of view, how we can become receivers. Like literally how we can like get beyond the cortisol and get beyond this little amygdala thing that just puts us in a fog and lulls our brain to sleep and go to that place that some people call flow state, go to that place that some people call sort of that greater conscious state. And I'm like, oh my God, this is the scientific language to what Rabbi Aaron teaches. And so then I put those things together, and it felt, and it still feels like Mary Poppins snapping her fingers and the drawers just open. And I feel like my life is a series of just synchronicities that I don't spend a lot of time trying to figure it out. I spend a lot of time trying to just be the energy that I want to be in the world. And then I meet it. It comes right back. It's like a boomerang. And then people are like, how are you friends with so-and-so? Or how did that thing happen? I'm like, I'm telling you, there's a vibration that's happening. It's like a river that's always flowing. And depending on where your vibe is, you'll meet whatever river is congruent with that. And so how cool that you can make that quantum leap. Literally, you can move yourself in a way where it's not about where are you in space or how much time will it take to get to a goal. It's more about vibrationally, how could you ascend to a certain place and then bump into everything that's hanging out in that radio station. And that's what the book is about. And I feel like it's really interesting because it was an arduous process to write the book. And then my publisher said, we really want to hold this book and have it come out right after the election. I was like, what does this have to do with any of that? And they were like, everything, because it's so about the oneness and it's so about what we really need to vote for, which is our own energetic sort of connecting to the one, to each other, to how we can. And I was like, yes. And they said, that's so positive. Let's put that out in December. And I was like, I freaking love that you even thought that thought. And so when you said, why this book, why now? Well, I thought all those messages seemed important. But then of all the times for me to be here in history, to bring us all together, which we already are together, because we are one, we're someone, we're some of the one, like I said, it's just, that's why, Mark, that's the answer to your question.
I love it. And before I have one other question that I want to dive deeper in, I have a lot, but the first part is, how would you, for someone listening, how would you define abundance? Like, what does that mean for you?
I so love that you asked me that. Okay. So I think Abraham Hicks says this really well. She says, we didn't come to the world for a pile of things. And then she follows it up and she says, you have much bigger dreams than that. And when she says that, you're just like, yes, ma'am. Yes.
Yeah.
So abundance is really, truly, it's this feeling that you crave, which is well-being. It's this feeling that you crave, which is this lightness of your own being. It's this feeling you crave where you're just getting these creative downloads and they don't stop. It's this feeling you crave where you feel connected to the divine. It's this feeling you crave where you feel so much purpose and contribution and meaning in your day. And as I say this, you're smiling because you live that and you reach for that every day. And you and I both know that even though in our careers, we've gotten some things and there's some stuff, what lights us up is looking for those moments in our days that feel truly abundant, because we're having a get to conversation like this where you and I like don't have to explain our souls to each other because there's just such a mirror in the other person that says, I love you, you got this. And you feel this feeling like you could never put a price on, and it makes me want to cry right now. Those are the things that we are after. We are after that feeling. And what's interesting is that what the world tries to sell us on is that our abundance is outside of us. And that if only we had more followers, we'd finally feel the wholeness inside. If only we had another Range Rover or our first Range Rover, we'd finally feel whole. And that is actually a wild goose chase, because it's the actual opposite. Wayne Dyer said, we don't get what we want, but we get what we are. And if you look on the science level, that's true. It's a law of resonance. And what does that mean? It means that if I go into a guitar store and there's 55 guitars on the wall and I take one guitar down and I play the G string, then all the other guitars will vibrate, but they won't just vibrate. It's the G string on the other guitars that vibrates, which means there is a law of resonance. And so when we are whole inside, when we find inside of us that which was always whole, the part of us that is so powerful, because just us being present can love another person into life. The fact that just being a loving hearted person and you walk in a room, there's something called congruence, where the person who's the most loving person in the room actually elevates the space, and we will tune ourselves like the guitars to the person who's the most authentic, and that will elevate the whole room. When you realize that you walk around with that secret weapon, you no longer feel urgency around needing things outside of you to make you feel whole. Because ultimately, if I say to somebody, because people say to me all the time, all the things that they want to create. And then I'm like, you want that because you want to feel what you think is going to make you feel. But what if by arriving at your own door and really finding who you are, the real I am within you, not the story in your mind, but the truth of your beingness. What if you were to find this part of you that's always within reach, that is, was, and will be, that has just an endless amount of equanimity and love, and it can just give endless amounts of love. There's a rabbi from the 17th century, the Maharal, he says, one candle can light an unlimited amount of candles and not lose its own flame. That's abundant.
Yeah, I love that.
When we are creative people, they start selling shoes, then they start building homes, then they start making music. Creativity is your abundance. Love is your abundance. And money and all that stuff, guess what? It follows that kind of abundance. So the thing I'm saying is, the path to your abundance is opening the door inside yourself, because it's right there. And then the ironic part is, that's what draws all the material abundance right to you, because it becomes a match, because you no longer need it. Because when you need something, you just keep pushing it further and further away. Because if we get what we are, not what we want, then we can't create from lack. We create in the 3D from being whole on the inside. Wholeness creates, not lack. And energy creates matter. Think about that. Energy creates matter, and it's got to be super potent energy. The energy from the sun creates photosynthesis. It's strong, coherent energy, right? An orgasm creates child. It's like this energy has to build and be so coherent. And energy, look at everything in the world. It's energy that creates matter. Matter doesn't create anything. So the more we are this energetic force, right, we can be heralded in the purple crown. And then all the synchronicity just starts to show up in your day. And the thing you want more than piles of things, which is actually kind of boring, is a mystical experience every day. You want to bump right into,
amen,
whoa, that was cool. I didn't see that coming. Whoa, I love that conversation. We as children looked forward to a field trip because it was new. There was a surprise, right? We as adults get into our amygdala and we want to predict and plan everything, when really our soul doesn't want that at all. It wants an adventure. It wants to feel the wind in its hair, right? That's abundance. Letting go of needing to try to control, because that all comes from fear, and moving into the realm of all possibility, because you're connected to what is so secure, which is the love and the goodness and the equanimity in you that can just, as Jon Kabat-Zinn says, we can't stop the waves, but we learn to surf. And so this is what we want. We want to bop down the street feeling connected to that part of ourselves. And when we are that, everything just moves towards us like a magnet. Everyone wants to be with you because you've already RSVP'd to your own party. And that's really abundance. So I love that you asked that question, because I think we have to begin with defining, what the hell does that mean?
Well, and who doesn't want more of that? You know, like, who doesn't want everything you just said? Like, who doesn't want to be the candle that lights all the candles? Who doesn't want to be the person at the party that we often, although I strive to be that person, but we often are like, that fucking person's got some swag. Like, it's kind of how the opposite happens when people dress really well to get authority. And then when you get the authority, you realize, like, I can dress however the fuck I want. And so they start to dress like a homeless person. But they have swag. And I'm like, you can actually become the person who just is, who totally energetically radiates. And it's just so powerful, although my metaphor is probably not that great. My curiosity to you is two things, which I think they're interwoven. So I'll let you dance with these two questions. The first is, how do we become that? Because that's like, okay, well, I am scared that I can't pay my rent. I am, you know, can't put food on my table. I'm afraid. And you're telling me to just not be afraid? Like, I do need money. Right. So there's that. And then I think this is correlated, but tell me, which is what makes us so resistant, other than a miracle, that then we go, holy shit, this doesn't work how I was told. And we're given those synchronicities all the time if we're paying attention. But like, what makes us so resistant to actually accepting? Because you talked about the G string and the, not G strings, but the G string on a guitar. We know it resonates. There's resonance happening. We know that, as you said, the music's in the air. Are you tuned to the music? That music is abundance too. It's not just, you know, the Beach Boys. So, okay, riff.
First of all, I love this question. And I think we have like a serious need to have this conversation, because people don't realize how much resistance they have to money. Like, so much resistance. They don't realize it's so unconscious, because there's been so much narrative and propaganda around certain things that when you really look at something, you tend to realize, and you know this part, like if somebody's wanting and they have this constant refrain, they want to be in a relationship, let's just say, but they're not, then you've studied this long enough to know there's something that scares them about that, or there's something that deep down won't allow them to have that experience because they have resistance. So it doesn't matter what you're telling yourself. If underneath the ocean is an iceberg of unconscious crap that says, no, don't go there, danger, like step away from it. So having done this podcast the last 7.5 years and met literally, I think I've met a few hundred thousand, maybe more people through the course of, you know, having all this time with people, it takes a second for me to identify how much serious resistance people have to money. So why? Well, first of all, what I hear all the time is that people, they want to be a good person. And I totally get that. And that's when I scratch my head and I'm like, I'm not picking up what you're putting down. And then they wind up explaining to me in one way or another that somehow money is bad, or somehow they feel they'll be judged for it, or somehow they feel that if you have more money, you become a worse person, which is really just interesting to sometimes like step back and question these beliefs just for a second. So I want to share something. So the Talmud, which is like, you know, thousands of years old, right? Moses passed this down to Joshua and it got passed. It's like this oral tradition that was eventually written down. And here's what it says about money. Okay. Just for giggles, right? It says that money is like rain falling in a garden. And what does that mean? It says, if rain falls on weeds, weeds will grow. It activates it. If rain falls on the roses will grow. It activates it. Money is an activator of what is. So what does that mean? It means if a good person winds up with the blessing of having, let's say, any blessing, children, they'll do good things with it. If a good person winds up with the fortune of having lots of money, they'll do good things with it. They have integrity. If a person who's not in integrity with themselves has any blessing, a relationship, they probably won't do very well with it. If they get money, they probably won't do a lot of good with it. So it's neutral. It's kind of like saying, do you judge people who have unlimited Wi-Fi? No, we don't have a story about Wi-Fi. But Wi-Fi is just a neutral resource, but some people use it for pretty gross things. They can look at interesting, horrible things on the internet or use their time to be nasty in people's comments. Other people use their Wi-Fi to connect with their grandparents and post nice things. And you and I try to put a podcast out. And so people will be like, social media is the worst. And I'm like, I don't know. I've curated a feed where I look at the people who inspire me. And I love the world I see on social media because, again, it's neutral. It's what you do with it, right? So That's interesting. And then here's the other thing that's interesting is that I'll say two more things. We definitely see ourselves as separate is the problem, right? Because the world is one. It's oneness. So what does that mean? I mean, Deepak Chopra, who was born in India, okay, which has a very real poverty issue, has written many books on abundance, right? He is so clear that the universe is totally abundant, right? The amount of cells you have, there's no even equation that could count them. You know, the amount of spices and the amount of foods and the amount of the circadian rhythm that you're tracking while you sleep, the sun, the moon, and the star. I mean, the world is expanding. It's so abundant. And yet we don't see that. We see ourselves as separate. And why that's interesting when it comes to money is because people feel shame. Like, because it's about me, this little me, this little ego, who am I to have this? And what would it mean if I did? Well, if I plant a cherry tree, I just give birth to the possibility of thousands of other cherry trees. If I paint my house and the value goes up, I just improve the value of my neighbor's house. Everything literally spreads. That's what abundance does. When I start a podcast, it inspires other people to start their own podcast, right? Abundance is abundance is abundance. In fact, even money itself, when my money goes into the bank, it immediately is funding people's mortgages and paying off people's credit cards. We are one. It's one collective. So then you say to yourself, oh, so on behalf of the collective, how much can I receive, period? How much joy can dance through me like a lightning rod, like a conduit, a conductor? In fact, the word money is actually the word currency. The word currency comes from the word current. It means it's got to keep moving. It's not supposed to stay in your hands. It's supposed to move through you. The figure eight of abundance is that you receive and you give. You receive and you give. We're so separated in our consciousness from each other that we do immediately go, why should I have that? Well, when you're doing it with that in mind, you're right. There is like a disconnect. But when you see yourself as like, what do I get to underwrite? What causes do I get to fund? Who do I get to be? How do I get to share this? How do I get to be a billboard for other people to go collect it and enjoy it? Everything in nature was meant to thrive. Redwood trees were meant to be as tall as they can be. They don't say to themselves, why would I be tall? It's like, no, on behalf of the collective ecosystem, you should shine. We need you thriving. My daughter and I, we took a little boat ride in the May River, and the little oyster beds were little. They do this little thing where they filter the waters. They spit the water. And I thought, I'm so glad that they're thriving, because we'd have red tide if these oysters didn't fully function, right? Because on behalf of all of us, just without oysters, you and I would stop living, right? Mm. We're all oneness. It's all oneness. So we all, on behalf of each other, need to be radiating. And then the thing about the fear is, here's what I'll say. We literally have, and you and I both study this and we geek out on this, so you probably say this in your own words, but I'm just gonna say it again. We literally have these neural pathways in our brains that have a certain capacity to receive. And when we get to the edge of the neural pathway, meaning what feels familiar as our personality, and we're going to receive more than we've received before, it feels unsafe. Literally. Mm-hmm. Like if someone's been in a bad relationship and then somebody kind comes along, they feel like throwing up. They don't have yet a reference point for that. So they feel like they're supposed to sabotage it because it's unfamiliar. When your brain recognizes that something is new, it thinks it's scared of it. It registers it as something to be afraid of, a dangerous. It's not. It's just, you have to say to yourself, it is safe to be abundant. It is safe to be safe. It is safe to receive fully on behalf of the greater good. And then in every way I want to receive. And what's interesting is nobody looks at someone who has a beautiful relationship and beautiful kids and says, how dare they have so much love? Instead, we've been conditioned to judge people who have a lot of money, because on some level, the people who judge people with money have decided that, how dare that person have something that I don't have access to, right? Because they've made that more important than, why are they not judging people who have tons of love in their life, right? Like, we are able to tap into receiving so much more. And it's kind of like a light bulb. Some light bulbs have the capacity for 40 watts. Some light bulb has the capacity for 75 watts. We have to stretch our capacity to just be better receivers. Because how are you helping the collective by receiving less? You know, nobody says, well, I only want to feel physically well 40% of the day. It's okay if I have a headache 60% of the time. Like, no one would say that because you don't perceive that you feeling healthy all day long is taking something away from someone else's physical well-being. But for some reason, you feel like if you're receiving tons of opportunities and wealth and all the good things that somehow you're taking from someone else's pile. No, there's an infinite amount. There's an infinite amount of Wi-Fi. There's an infinite amount of sunlight. We all have the capacity to just tap in. And then as we do, we help every wave in this ocean, which is all part of one ocean, to rise.
It feels like even connecting to that, I mean, I think I'll try to speak for everyone listening or watching, which is that there's a resonance and a truth to what you're saying. And the resistance that we have, which is that familiarity of being small, playing small, maybe we inherited that. I'm curious, when people start to step into that expansive state and they start to get synchronicities, do you see them experience challenges of staying in it? Like, is there a, because I know you're talking about like creating the new neural pathways, but like that sabotage, like maybe you start dating the guy, right? Who's like kind and generous or whatever. But then you're like, now I got to set. So like, yeah, what do you see in that?
Oh, it's just so fascinating. I mean, first of all, anyone who says that they just stay in it all the time, unless they're freaking Ram Dass, right? Yeah. They're lying. You know what I mean? Like the Dalai Lama and Thich Nhat Hanh, who passed, but like these people had practice. You know, we get better at what we practice, right? You practice having road rage, you'll just get faster and better at it, right? If you practice finding equanimity, you will find it more and more until you hang out more in your consciousness than you do in your little reactivity. So I do feel like after many years, people can chill there. And I think that there are examples of that, like I just said, Ram Dass, Dalai, like they just hung out there.
But yeah.
The average human bounces in and out of that state all the time, which is actually pretty cool. Because Rabbi Aaron said to me, you know, we have this ego, you know, that's the bouncing out of it and being more in that separation and going into reactivity and fear and the part of us that's not receiving in that moment because we're in fear, right? Because fear is control. So we close all the exits and kind of hunker down. But he said this, he said, without the Joker, there is no Batman, right? Batman exists, the hero exists because there is something that is resistant. There's contrast. And so honestly, for all of us, we have this part of us that wants to, it's like the anti-self that wants to like take us down. We all have that. But I feel like all of that is actually working on our behalf as well, because that contrast is how we begin to become more conscious and we go, wait, I just drifted from my truth. And now I have more of a wider perception of, oh yeah, here's where I want to be. Because contrast immediately, when you see something you don't like, it then creates for you the desire of what you want to create. And so all day long, we're constantly seeing both within ourselves, within the world, which helps us find our way to where am I meant to sail? What am I meant to do? So one thing I teach, which is super simple, I think, is the same way that you wake up and you select what you want to wear for the day, you select your clothes, select how you want to feel for the day. Literally, like when people meditate, I teach people how to meditate and then they feel so good. They feel so free and at ease and they play in their quantum playground and like see themselves as they really want to be in alignment. And it's just such a good feeling. And then I say, why would you wait for something to happen when you could give that feeling to yourself? And then it's like, oh, because I'm so addicted to cortisol. Literally, cortisol is more addictive than nicotine. So our brain says to us, no, you need shame. You need doubt. No, come on. You literally need to give your cells a hit of that lousy feeling because it's addicted to it the way it's addicted to a cigarette. But you can overcome that little bits at a time. So I say in the morning, take 90 seconds and say, okay, here's what I'm going to wear. I selected my clothes. Now I'm going to close my eyes and ask myself, what would ease feel like today? What would joy feel like? What would it feel like to play? What would feeling like connected to the mystical feel like today? And then take 90 seconds and feel it all through your body and just feel that, memorize where that lives in you, and then have your day. And even though you're still going to bounce in and out of it, you'll bounce way less because if you don't captain the ship, you will have Groundhog Day every day because your brain runs a program and it's going to think what it thought yesterday, which means it will feel how it felt yesterday, which means you'll have the same responses from the world because you will have the same stimulus, which is you, and the world will respond the same way, which means you won't create anything new.
When you were talking about how like the oysters filter the water and you know, of course, like the importance of things like bees, you know,
Right.
Like how all these different animals and different species and beings have a purpose, and without them, everything falls apart. Right. Do you see it then? And I like framing it in a way that creates a larger responsibility. But do you see that it as it is every person's actual responsibility to step most fully into their duty, their purpose, their passions, because without doing that, they're letting the collective down, which I don't want to create shame, but I'm like, I mean, like that's what made me start to write about relationships when I was like, oh, like if I don't, you know, that saying, if not me, then who? If not now, then when?
100% feel that way. In fact, I've shared this before, but my daughters like to do puzzles, which I like doing puzzles too, because they do in this like meditative state, just like coloring. I like coloring with them as well. And once in a while, when we're doing a puzzle, we will have a piece missing. Like we will be at the end, but we're missing like a corner piece or a middle piece, and it doesn't feel complete. And it's a real eyesore. Like, where is that piece? Mm-hmm. And I think every one of us is that missing piece. I think that if you're here, you're needed. I think we each, we're one in 400 trillion. That's the odds that we were born and put here, right? There's so many equations of how many different sperm egg combinations there could have been. No, it's you in this moment right now. And there's a reason for it. And I believe that every one of us is assigned, just like an orchestra has like brass and wood, and it's like different instruments. The triangle needs to be the triangle. And the sax needs to be the saxophone, and the drums need to be the drums, and full out, because, you know, Rabbi Aaron says to me something I love so much. He says, oneness does not mean sameness. Mm. It's the opposite. Oneness is every color on the spectrum of light is part of that one color, right? We know that, right? It gets perceived and goes into different fractals. It's all one, right? The Kabbalah says what the Big Bang said years later, which was there was this endless infinite light, and then it shattered in millions of pieces. And so it's fascinating that we don't understand that our uniqueness is part of the oneness, right? The periodic table of elements, all these unique different ways that energy gets stored and expresses itself, but it's all part of one energetic plane. It's one earth, but it's supposed to be different. And so if you don't do you, no one will, right? Like every fingerprint is different. In fact, what's the need for a human evolutionary to have a different fingerprint? I think it's a wink that you have a different imprint to make. You know, even my sibling, I have a sister who I'm really close to. We are so different. Like in some ways, yeah, we like some of the same movies and we sound similar on the phone. My mom can't tell us apart. But we're very, very different. And that's a gift. And so, no, I do think when people say, who am I to do this? I go, who are you not to do this? Like, I think people overestimate what should happen if they were meant to have a purpose. And then they underestimate what they're capable of. And I say, listen, you're not actually being asked to change the world. You're being asked to change the world for one person every day, because one person is a world. And can you do that? Of course you can. You could change the lives of six people probably every day, or nine, or 20. And those are the people, because we don't all speak the same language. We don't all have the same wisdom that will solve the problems that everybody needs. We all have a certain little group of people. There's like different, you know, schools of fish that can help each other to get to the next elevated state. And those are the people that we are the answer to the prayer that they had this morning. They needed to hear our story, or they need to hear whatever it is that we offer, or listen to our art, or whatever it is. It's like, that is your assignment. And the truth is that we know from all these happiness studies that the greatest happiness comes from a feeling that you've contributed. So therefore, it's like another wink back that that is your fulfillment too, is feeling that you are in alignment and offering, you know, a gift by definition is meant to be given away. If you have a gift because you can speak or you can connect people or you're a good matchmaker or you're good at coloring, there's a reason. You just have a gift. You're meant to give it away. And it feels so good to give it away.
That's so beautiful. And I'm for people who are listening, who are hearing all of this magic, what are some of the tools or like strategies? Because of course, that's what we want. Is like, what are some of the tools and strategies we can use to put ourselves in receptive mode? And a distinction that I really like you make, and I want you to walk us through, is doing versus undoing, and how that connects to like, how do I become this radio dial, this speaker, this whatever?
Yeah, I think it's such a good question. I mean, my friend Susie Moore says her new word, she wants to coin this phrase, is underthink it. Because the answer to the question is, we already know how to do all that. We were born knowing that. Children know how to do that. But adults start to overthink everything. Why? Really, they're afraid of being rejected. So they want to think it through. What does that mean? So fear of rejection, perfectionism is a trauma response. So what needs to happen for us to be in our creative state? Well, look at a preschool. You've never gone into a nursery school and not seen a child that gets lit up as soon as they bring out the paint or they're allowed to go in the sandbox. And that same child is willing to get paint in their hair and to not know what they're making. And the thing that we now know, Daniel Pink talks about this in his book, the best inventions come in moments of spontaneity when people are fiddling around with things. So the problem is that the amygdala brain, that part of our brain that wants to like think it through, it can't get into flow state. You have to have one or the other. Either you're not in control because you're allowing something greater than you to take control, or you're trying to predict it, which means you're blocking your creativity, right? So Michael Jordan was taught to meditate. Bill Jackson had them meditate, right? Because he wants to tap into something way bigger than what his mind's going to anticipate. He wants to move into a force, right? Jason Mraz is a friend of mine. He goes, when I go to make music, my studio is a mess. There's like a half-eaten avocado on the piano bench. There's shakers. There's a ukulele. There's some notes that written down. I've tried every different instrument, and that's the creative process. Ernest Hemingway used to say, write drunk, edit sober. Well, you got to write drunk. You know what I mean? And so you and I, why are we creating content? Because at some moment in history, we made a conscious choice to say, I'm just going to let myself make something that might be mediocre on my way to making something brilliant. Seth Godin, who's one of my mentors, says, he goes, people love my blog and I'm grateful. That's awesome. He goes, but I'm going to tell you a secret. The average is that half of my blogs are below average, because that's what average means. Not everything I write is brilliant, but you got to write your way through some of the stuff that's not brilliant and tell mediocre stories to tell better stories. Ed Sheeran says that when he started writing music, he says, you ever go skiing and you go up to the woods and you're staying in a cabin with your friends and you turn on the faucet and no one's been there for a little while, and the water comes out a little brown and like dark, and then you let the water run and it gets clearer. He's like, you got to write your way through the brown, sludgy music. Now that is what you really just asked me. Because most people have so much shame. They're so hard on themselves. They won't get to the brilliant stuff because they don't give themselves the grace to write their way through the sludgy music. And so I always say, be a C student, have something to edit, start making stuff. And then you find a flow state and you go, oh my God, I remember what it felt like to have fun. I stop editing while I'm creating and I just create for a while. And I go based on that one little impulse, because everybody knows what the impulse is. See, the answer to your question, Mark, I meet thousands and thousands of people and they say the same thing to me. And I go, you know the answer. They go, no, I don't know what to do next. What am I supposed to make? What's my purpose? What's my passion? How do I find it? I go, you know what it is. They go, no, I don't know. I don't. I go, no. I don't know is fear. what you're really telling me is, I know you have a little clue, like you want to make jewelry or you really want to start a podcast, but there's this overarching thought, which is, I'm not good enough to do it, or it's not possible. So if it's not possible anyway, why would I start? And if I'm not good enough, why would I start? When really it's totally possible and you're more than good enough. But when you let go of the outcome, you know, I came to Los Angeles because I wanted a record deal, and I was signed to Interscope, and then I was dropped from that label, and then I was signed to Atlantic Records, and then I was dropped from that label, and then I did licensed music to film and TV shows for 10 years. And then I started a podcast at 37. Well, what's cool about that for me is that I let go of how it had to look. I just knew, God, I want to use my voice. But I thought it was going to be one way. And then I was just totally happy to allow it to be whatever would be best for the collective that kept feeling fun. And Pete Holmes said to me, the dreams you ultimately dream are the dreams not that you chase, but that chase you back. And I think that sometimes we just haven't tried and tested enough stuff to know what's really in your alignment. Like, you might think your thing is that you're good at songwriting, but really you're actually good at speaking. You just haven't even done that yet. So I say, if you could go back to the nursery school room and let yourself play and every day make space to create, and this is why Julia Cameron wrote The Artist Way, like every day just start getting stuff out there, you wouldn't even scratch the surface of how much you can create in this world. Jim Henson, if Jim Henson wouldn't have died from pneumonia, he probably eventually wouldn't have just created the Muppets. He would have created hotels. He would have created an app. He would have taken us to the moon. Because once you unleash creativity, there's no end to what you can create.
Amen to that. Holy shit. I'm like at church. And it's such a good reminder, because I think for you listening or watching, to humanize this is like, in my own experience, I get stuck in how it has to look, or how I had, what my gift was, or why I thought I started, like the record label that you're talking about, you know, that you think you're here to make music and then you're here to do that, but do it in a different way. Just like music that is a different tone, I see so many people in that from a relational perspective, where they thought that was the relationship, which we all thought that about our first relationships, which I think is so ironic. You're like in grade 9 or grade 10 or sophomore, whatever the words are in the States. And it's like you date your first person and you're like, we're going to be together forever. And then all of a sudden you're not. And that's usually a godsend, but not because they're bad people, but because you don't know anything about relationships. And maybe they were bad people, but either way, it's like, you then are like, I'm a failure. The relationship didn't work. Oh my God, I'll never love again. And not realizing that the universe is guiding you. You're learning. And how do you see life's challenges then from the perspective of abundance, or like, I call in a ideal mate, or I call in abundance, or I call in a certain type of work, and then I don't get the specific things, or like end up repeating a similar pattern, or like you said, you get the record deal, you get dropped, and then you're like, I fucking had the dream, you know? So like, how do you see that in the orchestration of evolution?
I mean, honestly, it's so juicy because you win no matter what. And here's what I mean. I feel like we're all in soul school. Like, we come here to evolve, and we're constantly led to the lesson we need. So if we don't have the courage to choose our alignment, God, the infinite, the universe is so kind. It'll lead us to something that helps us see where our alignment is. Does that make sense?
Say that again, because that's so potent.
So if we don't have the courage to choose our alignment, then it will become something that is so obvious, because the world is constantly moving into wholeness. Here's what I mean. If you cut your hand without you doing anything, your body starts to move into repair. I cut my hand the other day because I opened the back trunk of my car, the SUV, and something fell out and it was shattered, and I picked it up, and when I picked it up, it cut. And I had to use this special glue, because now there's this cool thing, you don't have to go to the ER, right? that's how bad the cut was. And I was like, whoa, it's so cool that I have this glue, because I had my kids with me and I couldn't drive myself to the ER that quickly. And it worked. And then within days, I said to my daughter, look how my hand just knows how to repair itself. It's amazing. The universe is not net neutral. It's net positive, and it constantly moves everything to its wholeness. It's just like, for instance, here's another good example. This is an even better example. If you know anything about gardening and you want to help these trees, let's say you have a little sprout and you want it to turn into a big tree, you don't water right on it. You actually put the water in a circle a little bit further away from the tree. And then what does the root actually do? It reaches for the water. And by putting it outside, right where it is, you actually allow the roots to grow out, which means the tree can go up. And then if you really want the tree to keep growing, you put water in a wider circle, and the tree roots will reach for it. So we sometimes, in our best consciousness, which isn't fully evolved yet, we reach for something and we think that that's what we want and that's what's in alignment, and we're not quite there. So then the universe like moves your cheese, so to speak, because it wants you to reach for where you're really most meant to shine. And so if you know that, and that's how the world is always operating, then you're constantly led to these little Yoda moments where somebody crosses your path and says something and you go, oh my God, I don't even know why I wanted this job to work out so badly, because it's keeping me small. And I really am glad that I just got fired, because now it's forcing me to actually know what I didn't want myself to know that I knew, which is I'm really ready for something much bigger than this. And so I can look back at everything that happened in my life and see that that's what was happening, as long as I was willing to allow it to lead me. There's a river of life that's bigger than us, that's constantly leading us to wholeness. And when you get that, you win every time. You're always winning from that.
Yeah, it's such a different perspective. Instead of like, why did this happen again? It's like, oh, thank you, it happened again. So now I get to learn from it.
Yeah.
Lessons not done. And that could be really hard, because of course, like some of those repetitions are, you know, an unavailable person, or perhaps an abusive relationship, or perhaps a work that sucks your soul again. And then you're like, oh, there's still a part of me that believes that needs to learn from that experience, but also believes that I'm a match for these things.
Well, that's what it is. I mean, if you continue to have an experience, it's because that's the experience that you are co-creating on some level, because you're allowing yourself to receive that. And sometimes things have to get so painful to where you go, now I'm finally awake. I'm ready to allow for a much greater experience and way more ease in my life. And I'm going to finally set a boundary, or I'm going to finally choose for myself something that just feels like reciprocity. And right. I haven't really had that before.
Yeah. And that's, you know, at the basis of all quote unquote awakenings or radical transformations, or, you know, I think of the movie Joy, where Jennifer Lawrence is like got the most codependent life, like leeches all around her. And then all of a sudden she's like, fuck this. And the moment that's always met is, I'm tired of the life that I've accepted unconsciously, usually unconsciously. And I'm ready to create what I want. I can no longer tolerate any of this. So it's stepping into responsibility. It's stepping into creation. It's stepping into receiving. It's stepping into abundance, because it's saying like, what am I doing with breadcrumbs? Like, this is bullshit. And we all can choose to be there, but often we wait till we have to. And I think what we get better at, and I'm curious your thoughts, is that we get better at choosing it instead of waiting to have to choose it. Does that make sense?
That's 100% it. 100%. I mean, because the mind is constantly replaying, the mind is an artifact. So the mind has a negativity bias. So it's constantly wanting you to see through the lens of all your worst fears. And it really, boy, does it limit what it believes is possible for you.
Right.
But when you show up, let's say you do a 10-minute meditation. Oh my God, how radical would that be? And you come back home to the part of you that's really wise, then all possibilities exist in the quantum field at every second. And you get to select, what experience do I want to have today? How do I want to feel today? Why would I wait for something to let me have permission to feel good? I'm going to feel good right now. Mm. And what would a feel good person choose to do? And what would I say? And if I had the courage to just trust that I'm coming from love, what would love do today? Maybe love would break up with this person because love would say, there's better for both of us. Or what would love do today? Maybe love would just say, I am going to post who I voted for. And if you're triggered by that, you're welcome. Right. I love you too. And if you are inspired by that, you're welcome. It was neutral. I didn't need you to approve. I'm letting you go. I'm letting go of needing you to be anything. I'm not trying to control how you perceive me. And love is going to let you be. And I love you anyway. Wow. Like yeah. that.
That's liberation.
Yeah.
You know, and the creative flow that comes from, like I think of Stephen Pressfield, he shares a quote in the book, what is it called? A War of Art. He shares a quote from someone else where he talks about the hack, and the hack creates art for, like, he tries to predict what the customer wants, what the client wants, what the people want. And so his art is not flowing through him. He said it's like the politician who checks the polls before they take a position. And it's kind of like what we can become these hacks, which is not anything bad or good. It just is the way that amygdalas are designed to experience belonging. But it's like, what would you like to hear from me as opposed to what would I like to say? It's a very different way of orienting to the world.
I mean, that's the reason I would say there's like many, many, many reasons why I just am so grateful for you being you. But that's probably like the crown jewel of what you offer is you give people this radical permission to consider that they could be loved by being authentic, and they could love the world better by being authentic. And Rabbi Aaron and I talked about that early on, and he said, people believe that love is earned. And that's the problem. Love by definition is a gift. You don't have to earn love. That's
right.
That's not something you earn. And he said to me when he was dating his wife, right before they got engaged, he wanted to test her. So he says, why do you love me? And she said, I have no reason to. And he goes, what? Mm-hmm. And she goes, well, if I loved you for a reason, it would be the reason I love, not you. I choose to love you.
Mm.
And he said that was really profound. And when I had my first daughter and I held that little baby, I was brought to my knees from grace, because there is nothing that I could point to and say, oh, I know what I did to earn her faith, her eyes, her hands. This must have been what it was. It calculated its way to earning. No, no, no. You can't earn that. You don't have to. It's not earnable. That's love. Love is someone saying, even when you're a mess, I'm going to sit right here. It's okay. I'm choosing it. So what we do is we actually, you know this, we actually take away the possibility of being loved in our life by trying to earn it. Because intimacy is, this is me. Now, do you choose to love me for me? When it's unearned, right? And when we really act as love does, we don't have to be the same. We can say, I want to listen. That's interesting. I'm in this part of the orchestra. I'm brass. You're wood. Great. So cool, right? And maybe there's something in the middle of all of this that makes the most beautiful harmony. Maybe we don't need to be the same. Love is not earnable. And because people had an experience maybe growing up where they were loved only if they got straight A's, they were loved only if they were thin, then they constantly feel like in order to be in a relationship, I have to pretzel myself into who this person wants for me to be, which means there is no relationship. So what if we did this radical thing? My mindfulness teacher used to say every morning, invite every part of you to have tea with you and just roll out the welcome mat. Like, here's the part of me that's brave. Here's the part of me that's terrified. Here's the part of me that's a straight up liar. This is the part of me that lies constantly says yes when I mean no, never tells the truth. I love this. I love all these parts of me because this is the full living a life as a human. And therefore I can roll out that welcome and love to everybody else because we're all just doing doing our best to kind of make sense of the things we went through as a kid and the things that we're doing now. And it's beautiful and brilliant. And we're walking each other home. So it's so important that you do the work that you do, because that's real oneness. That's real abundance. Is as much as we think we want for a relationship to go well, and we're feeling that feeling of needing it to happen, we're needing a relationship, we're needing the business. Really, what you really want, you want to just be able to sit with yourself and feel like yourself.
Amen.
And when you can't do that, then you really get super worried about all these things outside of you needing to feel a certain way. But you could be on the most beautiful beach in the world. Jerry Seinfeld has this bit. He's like, my wife and I just came back from vacation. Or what I like to call it, you can argue too for $50,000 a night in Hawaii. Like, you know, like here's how we found a way to argue on the most beautiful bike ride. Like, it doesn't matter where you are or what you have around you. Because we've all had that experience where we're in a beautiful setting and we should, quote unquote, be happy, but we're pissed about something or we feel rejected. Yeah. And then you're almost like, you feel awful even more, because you're like, I'm sitting here looking out over this gorgeous ravine with this beautiful view, and why am I so pissed? What you want more than anything is to be able to be right next to yourself and go, I see you. And this is me. And this is me living my day, having beautiful thoughts in my head, beautiful wide open possibility in my heart, and feeling like I'm giving love to the world for no reason, feeling like I'm able to have the courage to love people anyway. Feels good. And then you could just eat a sandwich and call it a day. I mean, that's that's where we all want to be.
Yeah, it's such a gift too. We don't recognize the gift of being ourselves and accepting, you know, we seek it from another, but really we seek it from ourselves first. Like, it's not found outside of you, that acceptance, although someone can model the energetic of it and maybe that will soften us. But at the end of the day, we still need to be the one who receives our own experience, who is sitting with ourselves. And then through doing that, we model it, because we start to accept everyone around us as they are, which doesn't mean tolerate, which I think we often misconceive. I'm curious, like, what are some of the practical tools someone can start to apply to bring more joy, more ease, more equanimity, all the more abundance? What are some things that you're like, do these now?
Yeah. Well, a few things. First of all, if there's anybody in your life that you have a little tension with, and for no reason, after you listen to this podcast, no reason at all, you could just text them and be like, you don't have to go back and rehash it. Just like, hey, just thinking about you. Just want you to know, just sending you good vibes for the day, which takes, that takes courage. But like, that's a cool thing to do, because you realize how powerful you are to just like do that. That can totally change your life and that person's life. I think that's pretty cool. I also think that notice your thoughts every so often. Just put a reminder on your phone. Like, I'm just going to check in and notice what tape is playing. What's the soundtrack in my brain right now? Because I think it's really helpful to offer a new suggestion. For instance, maybe you write down this and you say this to yourself, what if it's going to work out better than I think? Because your brain's going to search for evidence, right, of what you tell it. And so it's quite amazing how certain thoughts, and I like starting with what if. Because if you say, like, it's all going to work out, your brain goes, no, it won't. But if you start an affirmation with what if, your brain doesn't give you the, it's so funny. You talk about hacking the system. If you want to over, there's literally like a wire. You can trip the wire so that it doesn't buzz. The alarm bells don't go off. If you want to get to yourself, you got to know how to like hack your own brain. So if you start an affirmation with, what if there are clues everywhere leading me to wholeness? Your mind won't attack you and will go, yeah, what if? And then it will start to be like, you know who you should call? Blah, 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 blah. So start your day with one affirmation. You can even go to ChatGPT. What are 10, but put what if at the beginning. What if I am safe to be abundant? What if things are about to be better than they've ever been? Just ride that wave for a second. Okay. Another thing is, do one abundant thing for someone every day. Like, when you go to Starbucks, buy a Starbucks for the person behind you, because it activates in you that you are abundant right now. the youth, because people will be like, once I have money, I'll do this and I'll do that. It's like, but what did you do today? Did you already do it? Like, you could be feeling abundant right now. And that activates this feeling in you, like, because you'll see the response from the person behind you will be this, like, you don't even know me. You just love me for no reason. And the response you'll get back is going to activate in you. You're going to want to do that again and again and again. The other thing I would say is your story has value. So whether you just decide to be real and share a 30-second clip of something on social media, or you decide to tell someone who's standing in line with you at the grocery store just some real fact, just open the door, because you'll notice, you'll be like, oh my God, how are you? What'd you buy? Bananas? Yeah, I had the biggest argument with my husband today, and I'm just, you know, this moment. And then the person's going to be like, oh my God, I totally know. I say that because there's literally abundance all around us. I want to tell you one really quick story about this, real quick. My dad passed away this summer. He passed away July 3rd. And I was feeling really sad, which was really actually beautiful, because grief feels like you're drowning in love. It's it's pretty wild. Anyway, we went to a restaurant 3 weeks after. It was my first time like going out to eat, because I was with him in hospice and we spent time with my family during the funeral. And anyway, come back to LA, we go out to dinner, and I'm feeling like a little shaky still. And there was a table of a couple sitting next to us. And I said to my family, I'm like, I think they're on their first date. I'm going to do something for them. And I'm going to do something for them because I'm not feeling 100%. It just feels good to do it. So right then and there, I walk over to the table. I'm like, are you guys on your first date? They're like, yeah. I'm like, I kind of just heard. I want to do something for you guys. I said, we're about to leave, but pick a dessert and I'll buy you the dessert. They're like, you're so cute. So the woman's like, what's your Instagram, or how can I get in touch with you? And I give it to her and we leave. And 2 hours later, I get a message from her on Instagram, and she says, thank you so much for that dessert. It was a Japanese restaurant. She said, we got the fried ice cream, the tempura ice cream, so good. I said, great. Are you going to have a second date? And she goes, you know what? I don't think so, but he's really nice and I'm really glad I met him. And she said, here's what I need you to know. She said, I'm a widow. And she said, tonight was my first date out since my husband died 4 years ago. And she said, my friends wanted me to get back out there and I was so scared. And you giving me that dessert, it was the sign I needed that I'm safe to do this. I start crying, Mark. I'm like, oh my gosh. And then I say to her, well, you don't understand. My dad just passed away. And I just felt compelled because I just wanted to be there for you. I said, he died on July 3rd. And she writes back and says, my husband passed away 4 years ago on July 3rd.
Oh, man.
And I start to cry. And she says, you want to take a walk and talk about grief? And I said, yeah. And so we became friends. And now I'm actually having her over this week to set her up with somebody else. And here's what I'm trying to say. There is nothing more abundant than that. What's more abundant than realizing that I have the power in a moment to do something for someone I don't know? And then there's this little wink from the universe like, hey, guess what? You were meant to do that because you unlocked this little miracle, which is you both share a day in common where you lost someone really important, which you never would have uncovered if you would have sat and felt sad. But instead, and Mark, every story of my life, can I tell you one more like
yeah.
that?
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah.
So when I was starting my podcast, I went to Podcast Movement. This is like 7 or 8 years ago. And everyone's like, you got to go to Podcast Movement. This is what people do. They got a network. And I was like, that's so not me, but I'll fine. I'll go. So I go and I'm in this cocktail hour and it's very schmoozy energy. And it felt really like fake. And I don't bring business cards. I don't have business. I don't want to be in there. So I said to my friend, what are they all doing in here? And she said, well, they're all actually trying to meet somebody who works on the Apple podcast team because Apple is significant. And if your podcast gets put on the main page of the Apple Podcasts homepage browser, it increases your visibility by like tons and tons. You could never pay for advertising like that. I go, okay, I'm out of here. I'll come back once the actual content and the panel discussion starts. She says, fine. So we were at the Hyatt Hotel. I leave. I walk a block to the Hilton and it's quiet. There's no conference. Oh, I'm like, oh, this is great. So I sit down, I order an iced tea. And I'm just like back in my own vibe because I could just be. I don't have to feel like I'm trying to make something happen and dodging all these people who have an agenda. It's very weird energy. So I feel relaxed. So this guy walks in, he sits down next to me and he sees that I have the same badge from the conference that he has. He goes, were you at the other hotel? I go, yeah, it's just kind of intense in there right now. He's like, I hate that. I hate that kind of energy. So he's reading a book. I'm sitting there drinking my iced tea. And he says, where are you from? And I tell him, and he's like, oh, I'm from the Midwest originally. Now I live in California. We were talking, blah, blah, blah. We talked for about 45 minutes. He gets up to leave. He gives me his business card. He says, I'm the head of Apple Podcasts.
What?
And I'd love to have you down to the offices. Would you come to Apple? And I'm like, son of a gun. So then I look at the card and he says, you know, we have an office in NorCal, but we have an office in Culver City. And I said, hang on a minute. I go, my daughter's school is on this street. Are you that building directly across from this school that's unmarked with valet parking? And that's your building? He goes, that's us. It's unmarked. Got valet park. I go, I've always wondered what the hell is that bougie building? Because it doesn't have a sign on it. He goes, that's it. I go, I'm there every single day. Every day. He goes, well, when are you going to be there next? I'm like, Monday. He goes, great. Come see me Monday for lunch. I'm like, I'll be there. Go drop her off at school. There I go, turn, make a new left turn into this building, go up to see him. He's the head of Apple Podcasts. They featured my podcast on Apple. They invited me to go to New York for the Apple, for the podcast upfronts. It was unbelievable. It was so easy. Here's what I'm trying to say. It's not meant to be hard. We're so conditioned to believe that it's hard work and hard earned. And then we almost feel satisfaction the harder it is. It's actually meant to be easier. It's meant to be so easy that you don't get to feel that hard work. The hard work is getting over the fear that tells you, you better force this. You better hustle. No, the hard work is letting go and saying, I'm leaving this networking event altogether. I'm out of here because I trust that what's meant for me is, and I'm out. And then you leave, and then you both had that same idea. So my entire life is a series of those events. And that is what's so awesome about abundance. When I say the universe is dialed into that, when you find your way to that river, you're like, oh my God, of course that girl's sitting right next to me. So if you're listening, I'm like, what little Easter egg hunt can you now go on in your day to uncover what's literally sitting beside you when you just show up as love would? Show up as love. Show up as love. Try it. Play a game with the universe. Say, all right, God, I'm going to test this out. Let's take this on a test drive. I promise it's going to be so good. It's going to be so good.
Listen, if you're listening to this and you're not like, okay, I need to do all of these things, then I don't know what. Like, the synchronicities that you're talking about are wild just by following what you feel, you know, by following passion, following joy, following ease. You're right. We're conditioned that it's got to be hard. It's got to be hustle. It's got to be all these things. And like you meant, the head of Apple Podcasts is sitting, like, it's just, it's too coincidental not to be miraculous. Do you know what I mean? And I think one of my favorite quotes from Ram Dass is, miracles just remind us that we don't know how it works. And I think we're like, I mean, everything you're saying is like, embrace it, embrace it. And I'm curious, for the people listening, one, where can they go immediately get a copy of your book that walks us through all this and more in much more depth? And second, where can they find more of you? And if there's anything else you want to share.
You're so sweet. Thank you for being so loving. I feel like I just was in a hyperbaric chamber of love and oxygen and wholeness. And I love being with you. You can buy my book anywhere. And then go to kathyheller.com/book, because there's all these really fun bonuses, including a book club that we are doing ongoing for a while, which means we're doing it before the book comes out. Once the book comes out, we're doing like New Year, New You meetups where I'm going to be reading chapters from the book. And then we're going to be doing little like workshops and discussion questions. And it just gets to be that we all finally get to have this now on our to-done list. Like, instead of saying, I want to do that, I want to manifest in that way, I want to be able to be in that vibe, it's like, no, we're going to do it together. So buy the book and then go to kathyheller.com/book and then come be a part of this movement of people that are all doing this work now and coming into that vibe together, which is really fun. So, and then where can you find me? Well, there. And then there's a podcast called Abundant Ever After. And then there's an Instagram. And And then I want to have you back on my podcast ASAP.
Let's do it. Well, Kathy, I'm left inspired with to-done lists to be completed. But I'm just left inspired again of just the reminders of alignment, the reminders of authenticity, the reminders of trusting, the reminders of synchronicity. Like every time I chat with you, I feel that way. And
same,
you know, there's no better person or people to surround yourself with than people that speak possibility and reminders of the sacredness of who you are. And
amen.
Your book club sounds like an opportunity. So if you're listening to this, watching this, there is nothing more powerful than surrounding yourself with people who are embracing what you desire to embrace, because you will naturally embrace it. And by signing up, you actually end up embracing it. So there's the little hack. What if? What if?
What if?
Kathy, thank you. I love you.
Oh, I love you so much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.